January session of the Court of Appeals. For the first case, Judge Carlson will be participating on briefs with us. The first case today is Producers Livestock versus Peterson. And for purposes of our video and audio recording, I'll announce the name of the case again. It's Producers Livestock versus Peterson. When you're ready, counsel.
Justice Moore, Justice Castle, may it please the court. This is a case...
Come on up to the podium.
Okay. This is a case that arises out of the corn volatility and high prices that we had in 2008. And to begin with, in the record, it shows... Hedging as it pertains to a futures contract for corn is not a transaction looking to a favorable fluctuation in price for the realization for profit, whereas speculation is looking for a favorable fluctuation in price. And the difference between speculation and hedging is very important in this case. Producers Livestock Marketing filed against Mr. Peterson suit on four hedge contracts and ultimately got summary judgment for $722,550. Mr. Peterson, in defending himself, was able to locate an expert witness, a gentleman by the name of Wally Muse, who was a licensed commodity broker, who indicated that producers should have known that Mr. Peterson was speculating rather than hedging. And producers itself, through John Nelson, who managed it, described Peterson's marketing philosophy as not a traditional hedge himself. And the evidence shows, according to Mr. Muse, if producers had met their duty and placed Mr. Peterson in a speculative account instead of a hedging account, we wouldn't have this litigation for this amount of loss. Because either in a speculative account, he would have been able to meet his margin calls as the market went against him, or if he would have been out of margin, then the contracts would have been liquidated and we wouldn't have allowed these contracts to basically roll from June 2008 till their expiration.
Was there any evidence that Mr. Peterson did not understand that he was entering into a hedge contract or that he had no experience in that regard?
In Mr. Peterson's deposition, I believe he was asked the question, well, why did you get into these contracts? And he indicated, because I thought the corn market was going to go up.
So he wanted to avoid the risk of an increase in price?
No, he wanted to make a profit on these corn contracts. If he had bought the corn contracts at the $7 range and then the price, the cash price went to $9, he would have had a profit there. And in fact, initially on these corn contracts, they could have been liquidated shortly after he got into them at a profit in excess of $100,000. I believe the evidence shows he was a decent farmer. He's a gentleman over 80 years old, but he is not a commodities broker, nor was he familiar with the fact with what he's trying to do. Speculation is okay, I believe. You know, we need to have speculators to make the market work, but he wasn't aware that if he chose to speculate, he needed to be in a speculative account. And if they would have put him in the speculative account, again, he would not have suffered these losses because they wouldn't have been advancing the money to maintain the position for the margin calls, and if he didn't have the money, he would have been out. Or if he would have paid the money as he would have went along. The other thing is, when the court looks at it, the court, one of the errors assigned by Mr. Peterson is the trial court said that producers kept informed about market conditions and shared that information with Peterson. It says the trial court erred there. Producers admitted in writing it never advised him to liquidate the December 2008 futures contracts, and it further stated producers neither undertook nor endeavored to discharge as a volunteer any duty to keep Mr. Peterson informed or make regular contact with him or render advice to him about commodities trading. And that's in Exhibit 17, page 3. The hedge contracts themselves all says marketers agreed in subparagraph 5 to keep well informed on market conditions and maintain regular contact with seller throughout the contracted period.
But that doesn't include giving advice to the seller, does it? I mean, the language of that provision that you're reading from doesn't say shall give advice to Peterson.
It does not expressly state that. But I believe, you know, he paid a service fee of $10,000 to producers for getting into these contracts. And again, Mr. Muse stated, if he wished to speculate, producers had a duty to put him in that account, and they should have known that he was speculating. Furthermore, Muse indicated that producers did not meet its duties as broker under those four contracts and shares fault for the losses suffered on said contracts. Yet, in this summary judgment, at the summary judgment level, the court does not apportion any fault to producers or let that go for a decision by the jury after some expert testimony. Rather, it just said producers met it all, summary judgment. And so the particular errors in this matter are set forth on page 6 of appellant's brief, and there are 7 errors. And additionally, I would note, I believe Peterson in the pleadings raised as his affirmative defenses, he raised as affirmative defenses sufficiently to where producers had to be able to prove that it met its duties under the contract. And I believe when the court looks at the record based on the evidence presented at the summary judgment level, it is clear that there is a fact issue over that that should be decided by a trial rather than the court saying there is no factual issue exists, summary judgment.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but do I understand from your presentation that Mr. Muse's testimony is what provides the genuine issue of material fact in this
case?
Not
only Mr. Muse, but I believe Mr. Peterson's deposition testimony itself saying they never told me to get out of the contracts. Producer's own admission itself that it never undertook nor endeavored to provide any advice to Mr. Peterson.
I guess if the contract doesn't include that duty, though, how does that create a genuine issue of material fact?
When you look at those contracts that are written, to me those contracts are a little similar to what you see in agriculture a lot of times. They're not completely complete, you know. It's not a fully, I believe, a fully integrated contract that two lawyers would have went through that specifically provided every duty, you know. It's hedge, and then they've got the zero on there, and the contracts state that producers shall keep Peterson informed of market conditions, and I think a reasonable reading of that would be then that they had the duty of when to tell him to get out. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, my name is Jason Botlinger, Domino Law Group, PCLLO, here on behalf of the plaintiff below and the appellee here, Producers Livestock Marketing Association. The unsuperseded summary judgment in this case was rendered because after repeated inquiries by the trial court of Mr. Peterson's counsel, Mr. Peterson's counsel was unable to identify a single genuine issue of material fact that precluded summary judgment. This is not a fault of Mr. Peterson's counsel. He was well represented, and is. If there was an issue of fact in this record, Mr. Gawecki would have found it. The fact is, there is no genuine issue of material fact that precluded summary judgment in this matter. A review of Mr. Peterson's assignments of error make this clear. Producers Livestock Marketing Association fulfilled every duty impended upon it by the contracts at issue here. The first four of Mr. Peterson's assignments of error all essentially boil down to the same central allegation, and that is that PLMA failed to advise Mr. Peterson to get out of the contracts. But as Your Honor has correctly questioned Mr. Gawecki, the contracts do not contain any such duty. No statements in Mr. Muse's affidavit create that duty. The presence or absence of a duty is a question of law for this court, not for Mr. Muse. There was no duty to advise in these contracts. The contracts contained duties for PLMA to execute the express instructions of its customer, Mr. Peterson. Once those express instructions were executed, PLMA had an obligation to pay the margin calls and to stay informed and maintain regular contact with Mr. Peterson. The uncontroverted facts established at the oral hearing on the motion for summary judgment established PLMA discharged each and every one of those duties. That same evidence and those same uncontroverted facts conclusively disprove each of Mr. Peterson's defenses, and they conclusively disprove Mr. Peterson's counterclaim. Now, Mr. Peterson's fifth assignment of error is slightly different, and that has to do with whether PLMA had some duty to advise Mr. Peterson that he should have entered into a speculative contract rather than a hedge contract. The uncontroverted evidence before Your Honors and in this record establishes that Mr. Peterson, for several years prior to entering into these June 2008 hedge transactions, had been a hedger of corn to protect against an adverse change in the price of corn, which he would then feed his cattle. The uncontroverted facts in Mr. Peterson's deposition established that when he came to PLMA again in June 2008 and requested that PLMA purchase board positions for corn, he did not state any different purpose to PLMA. As far as PLMA knew from past conduct and from Mr. Peterson's dealings in this transaction, Mr. Peterson was hedging corn that he would then feed to his cattle. There is no contrary fact in the record, and there is no reasonable inference that can be drawn from those facts to establish otherwise. Mr. Peterson was informed. He entered into these contracts intelligently and voluntarily, and he chose to continue with these contracts once the positions were placed. Mr. Peterson was kept informed on at least a weekly basis. He was informed when the contracts posted a profit. He was informed when the contracts posted a loss. He was informed when margin calls were made, and he was informed of the amount of the margin calls. Now, Mr. Peterson, during his deposition, acknowledged that his reason for wanting to stay with these hedge positions was that he believed the market would come back. But he never instructed, and he never instructed PLMA to sell those positions. This was not a discretionary account. PLMA had no discretion other than to execute the express instructions of its customer, which it did. The sixth assignment of error before Your Honors is a general allegation that summary judgment is inappropriate. Summary judgment was appropriate here. There were no genuine issues of material fact. PLMA discharged its duties confined to the four corners of the contracts before Your Honors, and every element of PLMA's claims are established by the uncontroverted facts. The final assignment of error Mr. Peterson brings for your honors is that the trial court was incorrect in overruling, or excuse me, in granting summary judgment in favor of PLMA and against Mr. Peterson on his counterclaim. The counterclaim takes this notion, this argument that PLMA had a duty to advise Mr. Peterson, and ratchets it up a few notches. Here, Mr. Peterson contends that PLMA was a guarantor of his market success, that because PLMA did not liquidate his positions, contrary to Mr. Peterson's express instructions, during the 10-day window between June 18th and June 27th, when the contracts posted a profit, Mr. Peterson contends PLMA is liable to him for a sum in excess of $100,000. This is not the law, and the facts do not support any such interpretation. If the facts and the law were as Mr. Peterson wishes them to be, there would be two kinds of traders in this world: winners and plaintiffs. Neither the law nor the facts of this case justify that conclusion. Summary judgment was appropriate, and PLMA respectfully asks that summary judgment be affirmed. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
No questions. Thank you. Mr. Gawicki, he has some time remaining.
The fact there is the loss, and the fact that I'm sure Mr. Peterson now wishes he would have never been in those contracts is without question. But here's the deal. He is an older farmer. It's fine if a farmer wants to speculate. There's nothing wrong with that. He pays his $10,000 to the commodity broker, and he can speculate all he wants. But if he's going to speculate, he needs to be put, the person that knows better, which is producers, has a duty to put him, if he wants to speculate, into a speculative account. And if he puts him into a speculative account, then as a loss, if a loss happens, he's paying the margin calls. Or if he doesn't have the money to pay, he is out of the trade. There's no. He is not requesting, and what this brief shows, he is not requesting, yeah, I should have won, I was guaranteed to win. But if he wanted to speculate by the commodity broker who knows better than he does, who is getting the $10,000 fee, they have the duty to put him in a speculative account rather than calling it hedging so that they can pay the margin calls and leave him in a hedging account.
Thank you, counsel. I believe you've gone over time, so I appreciate it. Counsel, you are excused. The case is submitted. And the next case is State versus Local.